Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Episode 9 of The Snyder Cut. I am Jeff Snyder, Senior Film Reporter here at Collider.com. Happy Friday to everybody. It is Emmy weekend. Guys, I got a lot of money on the Emmys, although I don't know that I'll ever be able to withdraw it from my account. God, these online gambling sites, they don't make it easy on you. I've read so many Emmy predictions lists. It sounds like Veep and Game of Thrones are the front runners. HBO, I'm going to the HBO party. I don't know who I'm bringing yet, but I'm going. And it sounds like that's going to be the place to be. Hopefully I run into Bill Hader, who's up for Barry this weekend. But yeah, I would love to see, even though I don't watch the show, I have a lot of money riding on Succession. Succession had crazy odds. But I just don't know if people are going to be voting for like season one, which apparently is not as good as season two, or if they're going to be voting for just the show that they watch right now and they love. I mean, I'm surprised that Game of Thrones is supposed to like run away with this thing because it sounded like most people didn't really love the last season. The Emmys are so much different than the Oscars, and it's why I pay so little attention to the Emmys, because it's like there's a whole different set of criteria. I mean, I know that people get Oscars for, you know, lifetime achievement type of things. You know, they give Pacino an Oscar for Scent of a Woman or whatever. But I don't know. With Emmys, it's like, you know, if a show is leaving, like they want to honor the show. It's the last time it'll be eligible, you know, because, you know, shows are not like people. You know, Al Pacino has been working for the last 25 years, 30 years since Scent of a Woman or whatever. So. But they're like, with shows, I don't know, we're never going to get another Game of Thrones. We need to give it all the Emmys right now. I never understood that mentality. And I don't also know who the TV Academy is. It's not like you have to be invited into the TV Academy. I think you just have to pay your way into it. And I think a lot of networks are just paying to have their staffers join the TV Academy. And everybody's just, you know, voting for their own stuff. So I don't know how much the Emmys necessarily represent the best. And even when I'm writing like your general casting story, like I put a lot of stock in Oscar wins and nominations. I'm like Oscar nominated actor and Oscar winning actor, but like it just doesn't feel the same when I write Emmys. And that's probably why I'm a film reporter, not a TV reporter. It's not a lack of respect for television. In fact, we're going to be talking about television a lot on this episode, but yeah, movies just, they make more sense to me, particularly when it comes to awards. Speaking of awards, how about Brad Pitt? He has announced that he's going to abstain from campaigning. Now, of course, he says this while he's, you know, in the middle of a New York Times interview, and he's on the cover of GQ, and there's Hollywood Reporter stories about how he showed up early to the premiere of Ad Astra to talk to every journalist who was there. Man, Brad Pitt, apparently a nicer guy than everybody at the Alec Baldwin roast that I attended the other week, because I didn't even talk to anybody, really. I talked to Arturo Castro and Derek Waters, the creator of Drunk History, when I did the red carpet for the Alec Baldwin roast. I didn't get any of the roasters. I didn't get any major stars, and that's why I'm never doing a red carpet again. But apparently, if you were on the red carpet for Ad Astra, you got to talk to Brad Pitt, and there was no publicist tapping you on the shoulder, you know, to say wrap it up. So, man, that sounds like it would have been a fun carpet. Matt Goldberg, by the way, got an on-camera interview with Brad Pitt. That's on Collider.com. Frosty had said he'd never in his 15 years ever interviewed Brad Pitt. So it was quite the coup for Collider to have Matt Goldberg do this very cool interview, and he talks about what he had planned with Fincher on World War Z, too. Sorry. As far as Brad Pitt and his anti-Oscar campaign, I mean, more power to him. I don't think, you know, Brad Pitt is pretty visible. Like, he will be out there this season, whether it is physically him or whether his image is just everywhere. Not only does he have Ad Astra, which some people are calling a masterpiece. I'm planning to see it tonight with my buddy Matt Silverman. Wasn't able to see it last night as I'd hoped. I don't know. It seems like, you know, much better chance for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in the supporting category. I don't know if he'll ultimately win. He's going to have some stiff competition. Who knows who in The Irishman is going to pop? Pacino, Pesci. But Brad Pitt, definitely going to be a front runner. To me, I really think you don't need to campaign, particularly somebody like Brad Pitt. But like, if the work is good enough, it will speak for itself. And that's why I always point to like Monique who won an Oscar for Precious, wasn't like, you know, nearly as beloved as Brad Pitt or some kind of like industry insider. She didn't play by the rules of the industry, and she won anyways because the performance was just that good. And to have given it to anybody else who did play the game or whatever, I don't even know how many people did back then because I don't know how many people played the game that year because it just seemed like an inevitability that Monique was going to win. Perhaps she had that on her side. Like, I don't think Brad Pitt is an inevitability like Monique was. But I really respected Monique for not, you know, getting on her hands and knees and begging for an Oscar and just saying, listen, the work's up there. That's what you're judging. It's not about me glad-handing and kissing babies on the campaign trail. I don't think Brad Pitt should have to do that either. Brad Pitt, a better actor than he gets credit for. Like, people sort of written Brad Pitt off as like a pretty boy or, you know, some people. But that couldn't be further from the truth. The guy, he has a bunch of acting nominations. He was first nominated for 12 Monkeys. Then that was in support. Then he got his first leading nominations for Benjamin Button and Moneyball. He was nominated for Best Picture for Moneyball. He won Best Picture for 12 Years a Slave and was nominated again for The Big Short. I guess he did not get an actual – his name was – he was not one of the actual recipients the year that Moonlight won, but his company, Plan B, was behind that film. So, God, Brad Pitt has had his hands in all kinds of, you know, Oscar-winning, Oscar-nominated films over the last decade. The Academy loves him, but he's never won for acting. I thought he was terrific in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I thought he was the highlight. But, yeah, I don't think that this is going to hurt him at all. There's going to be plenty of people on the campaign trail, plenty of people to write about. We don't necessarily need Brad Pitt. What else we got this week? How about Brad Pitt's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood co-star Margot Robbie? She's going to produce and star in a feature adaptation of Cody Blue Snyder, no relation, Cody Blue Snyder's short film Fool's Day. This is one of my favorite short films, guys. If you have ever come over to my apartment, which if you're listening to this, you probably haven't. But anybody who enters the In Snyder's domain, In Snyder HQ, pretty much said, you know, I asked him, do you got 20 minutes? Because I would love to show you a short film. That is Fool's Day, available on Vimeo. Brilliant concept. I don't know how much I want to spoil. You can go over there and check it out. I'm actually surprised that Cody Blue Snyder has not pulled his short film from Vimeo since, you know, the feature really is the same, going to be the same idea. But it's basically about a classroom of children, and there is a tragedy, and the children have to cover up this heinous thing that has happened. And Margot Robbie's going to play their teacher. I love it. I love, you know, comedies that have a kind of sick, twisted sense of humor. If you ever – there's that SNL sketch that like riffed on Dead Poets Society a few years ago where at the end of – like, you know, they're all standing up on their desk and saying, oh, captain, my captain, that kind of thing. And then Pete Davidson, I think it is, stands up and gets like beheaded by a ceiling fan that he doesn't see above him, and there's just blood everywhere. That's sort of the direction that this Fool's Day – short goes. I had a blast with it, and God, I've been tracking this for so long. There's a DARE officer involved, and the kids are trying to hide this crime from the DARE officer. They have really struggled to cast the DARE officer. They've sent out a ton of offers. A lot of high-profile people have passed on it, so I can't wait to see where they actually land on that. If it was up to me, I'd just bring back the guy from the short film. He was fantastic, but I get that they want a name for this. The guy kind of felt like a low-rent Jack Black, if you will, maybe they get Jack Black for this. I don't know. But Fool's Day is definitely a New Line project that I'm looking forward to. A couple of other exciting things on the New Line front this week. They are really dipping into the library. I mean, this week alone, and I'm trying a couple of other things, but this week alone, Issa Rae announced that she is going to produce and potentially star in a remake of Set It Off. That movie from the mid-90s where four women come together to rob a bank. It was like Jada Pinkett Smith, Queen Latifah, Vivica Fox, and Kimberly Elise. So Issa Rae, I'm curious as to which character she has her eye on. But listen, again, given the day and the age and the marketplace, female-driven stuff is really working. And you can keep the budget down on something like this. It doesn't need to be big like Charlie's Angels type budget. It doesn't need to have the pressure of that kind of tentpole. If you make Set It Off for $10-20 million and throw another, you know, $20 million on marketing, $20-30 million for a wide release, like, okay, then you have a movie all in that is going to cost, I don't know, $30-40, maybe $50 million. I think that's worth a gamble in this day and age, especially depending on who you would get, you know, to surround Issa Rae with. I really liked Little. That was a cute movie. So I'm a fan of Insecure. I have stopped watching it, but I support Issa Rae and her feature career. I don't know how much longer Insecure is that renewed. I don't know if it's coming back for one more season or two more seasons or what the deal is. But I think that Issa Rae is definitely primed for a solid feature career once she is done with her responsibilities on that show. Elsewhere, New Line and LeBron James remaking House Party. This one's been in the works for a little while. They got director Cal Maddock, who did the video for Old Town Road, to direct this. He's going to be working off a script by Stephen Glover. I think it's Jamal Allouri, both guys who wrote right on Atlanta and shared an Emmy nomination on Saturday Night Live. Cal Maddock, I watched this Old Town Road video. It was good, you know, for what it was. Because I think that the art of the music video, it's kind of like a lost art these days. But this was a fun one, and I can see, you know, well, Cal Maddock has a certain amount of heat on him. And LeBron, you know, he's always searching for that heat. He's made smart moves via his Spring Hill Entertainment banner. So I think this is a decent hire. And again, I'm just looking forward to seeing who they ultimately get for this House Party remake. I think they should be going after somebody like Shameik Moore, who voiced Miles Morales in Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse. So that sort of did it for New Line this week. Over at Paramount, they got Jamie Bell and Jodie Turner-Smith from Queen and Slim to be in Without Remorse. This is the Michael B. Jordan spy movie based on the Tom Clancy book. Michael B. Jordan's going to be playing John Clark, aka John Kelly, who sort of worked alongside Jack Ryan and was part of that universe. Now that character is getting his own movie. Jodie Turner-Smith is going to be playing Greer, which is either the daughter or granddaughter or niece or who knows what of that James Greer character who was played by James Earl Jones in Clear and Present Danger. And Jamie Bell is going to be playing, I think it's Robert Ritter or something like that, who recruits John Clark, John Kelly into the CIA. So it's a fantastic four reunion, folks. Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Bell getting back together. Jamie Bell is a fantastic actor. Just did Rocket Man for Paramount, so he has a relationship with that studio. Jodie Turner-Smith, though, she is the name you got to remember. Haven't seen Queen and Smith yet. Queen and Slim yet. Haven't seen Queen and Slim yet. That is going to debut at AFI, but I have heard good things, and I hear it's a real breakout turn for Jodie Turner-Smith. So it'll be, pretty good to see her. I'm looking forward to seeing her opposite Michael B. Jordan. I don't know if they're going to be sort of like a team or if there's going to be any sexual tension there, if there's romantic, if she's like a romantic interest. I don't know how they're actually setting up her character. But Without Remorse seems like it's coming together quite nicely. And it's from Stefano Salima, who did the Sicario sequel, which I liked more than most people. What else we got? We got Joaquin Phoenix. Hot off box office projections for Joker that say this movie's going to open to at least $82 million. I will take the over on that. I'll go as 89 to 94. That's my range for Joker. But Joaquin, just won Best Actor Prize at the Venice Film Festival. Now he has found his next thing. And that is going to be an A24 drama from Mike Mills, the award Oscar-nominated writer-director of 20th Century Women, of Thumbsucker, and Beginners, for which won Christopher Plummer his Oscar. Tough to weigh in on this one because I don't really know what it's about. There's no plot details, no idea what this movie is. I mean, Joaquin is obviously one of the most gifted actors alive on the planet. I can't wait to see what he's done in Joker. I hear it's a real tour de force that is going to thrust him into Oscar consideration. I would be surprised that if they do give him an Oscar, so soon after giving Heath Ledger one for playing the exact same character. But obviously, this is a very different take. And Joaquin Phoenix versus Adam Driver, that is what it seems to be coming down to, at least right now. Plenty of movies left to see, though. So Joaquin, has the world at his feet. He can sort of do anything he wants in Hollywood after this Joker movie. And teaming up with Mike Mills. I like Mike Mills a lot. Like, he's a solid filmmaker. He hasn't made a bad movie yet. He just hasn't made a movie that I love. I think Thumbsucker might even be my favorite one, but maybe it was just because it was the first and I was, the youngest and most impressionable when I saw it. I just love Lou Taylor Pucci in that film. Beginners was wonderful. And 20th Century Women was like a solid B+. These are all like solid B plus movies. But I can't say that I've loved anything that he has done. Even like my taste with Joaquin, I don't go to the movies that everybody else kind of goes to, like The Master. You know, when I think of him, I think of him as the kid from To Die For, like still, after all these years. And Her. Her was like a legit masterpiece, I thought. I think that's an interesting pairing on paper. Joaquin Phoenix, Mike Mills. I don't know what kind of trouble they're going to get into, but, you know, A24, you got to respect them. Whether you love their work or hate their work, and I generally fall on one of those two sides of the spectrum, you got to respect A24. You got to give their stuff a chance. And, you know, they got good taste. So this project sounds promising. Universal staying in business with M. Night Shyamalan assigning him release dates for two more movies. This is just a great business that Universal has found itself in. They don't have like the IP necessarily that a Disney or a Warner Brothers have. They don't have like superheroes like Fast and Furious and Despicable Me. Those are like their big franchises. And they have Blumhouse. And they crush it on the Blumhouse front. They know how to sell those movies. And M. Night is, you know, has been working with Blum on the last couple of films. I don't know if Blumhouse is involved in either of these projects, these new M. Night movies. But, man, do they know what they're doing with this kind of, you know, elevated genre stuff? M. Night is just crushing it for them. His last few movies have made like $600 million worldwide on like a production budget of $30 or $40 million. Absurd profits coming from the M. Night corner of the universe there. So very, very smart move by Universal. They also announced a release date, an August 2020 date for Nobody. I got a good feeling about this movie. It's coming from Ilya Naishuller, who did Hardcore Henry, that first-person action shooter with movie with Charlton Copley. It was a lot of fun. Like that could have been a gimmick that wore itself out quickly, wore out its welcome. But I thought he did a pretty good job with that movie. And Nobody's going to star Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. And he's basically just going to play a normal guy who is pushed to his breaking point, almost like a falling down type situation, and decides to go out and get revenge on you know, the people in society who have wronged him. He's just a nobody. He's a nobody, but he's a badass, and I think he's been training for this role too, I've heard. So, although if you're an average Joe, you don't want to look too ripped on camera. But yeah, I imagine he had to, you know, do some cool stunt work. Anyways, looking forward to Nobody. I got a good feeling about that one. Elsewhere, we got Amanda Seyfried doing another like genre movie, Things Heard and Seen. What interested me about this one, because she just wrapped the one with Kevin Bacon, is that this one hails from the American Splendor directors. I can't even tell you what the last thing they directed was. Ugh, I'm blanking. But they are very interesting, and I don't know. I can't picture them doing a horror movie. And Amanda Seyfried, I don't know. Like she's seen some better days, I think, as an actress. Like the material that she's getting just isn't up to snuff. But hey, these directors, she's in good hands with these two, and it is a genre movie. So I don't know. Depending on word of mouth, I'm down to check that one out. What else do we got? Ooh. Haley Lou Richardson and Barbie Ferreira, who plays Kat Hernandez on Euphoria, they're doing this HBO Max movie called Unpregnant. It's basically about Haley Lou Richardson plays this Missouri teenager who, you know, goes on a road trip with her ex-best friend to – it's like a 900-mile road trip to New Mexico to get a legal abortion. What was fascinating about this is that in the announcement sent over by HBO Max, I hope they don't hear this and decide to never send me anything again, but the word abortion is not in the press release. I mean, if you're going to make a movie called Unpregnant and make it about this kind of story, like you got to be prepared for any, you know, press that comes with it. And I don't think you can really shy away from that A word. I mean, you know, when I was writing up the article yesterday, it was described as sort of a third rail topic because, like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. This is going to be a controversial movie no matter what. I don't know what is controversial about a woman's right to choose. I don't know why that needs to be controversial at all. But obviously there are a lot of pro-life people out there, and it'll be interesting to see whether this movie turns them off or prevents them from – encourage them to unsubscribe from HBO Max or not buy a subscription in the first place. This movie is supposed to be ready in time for the launch. Hayley Lou Richardson is a young actress who has really grown on me. Like, she started out sort of playing the best friend and then graduated to playing the lead. She just did this 5 Feet Apart movie with Cole Sprouse. I didn't see that one. But she's also doing more sort of thoughtful material. She worked with Koganaga on Columbus, and she's going to be in his next film after Yang. So, you know, her career is really developing nicely. And Barbie Furr, I like her work a lot on Euphoria. I'm impressed by that entire young cast, especially Jacob Elordi. I think he's got a really bright future. I like, you know, what I've seen out of him. Barbie Ferreira, I like that she's promoting this sort of body positive image. You know, as she plays the curvy cam girl on the show, she's got something. She's got some fire to her, and I like that it's not just two best friends. Like, she's the ex-best friend, so there's some tension there. And maybe Hayley Lou's character is just like, listen, I got nobody else to turn to. I know we had a falling out. You slept with my boyfriend last year. You know, you said that thing about me that humiliated me in high school, but I need your help right now. So I like the idea of a girl and her ex-best friend on a road trip to get a legal abortion. What else? Michael Fassbender starring in Taika Waititi's next movie, Next Goal Wins. It's about like a Samoan soccer team trying to qualify for the World Cup. I'm told Fassbender not playing the lead here, so I would assume that means he's not playing the coach of the team. I don't know where he falls into it. Maybe he's the head of the soccer federation who's like, you guys will never win a game, and you know, then the coach, you know, moves to prove him wrong or something like that. But Michael Fassbender, he's been on a brutal tear of films. From, you know, he's been stuck playing Magneto in those X-Men movies. He did The Snowman, Assassin's Creed, which was just a terrible choice. I didn't even bother to see that one. But like, this guy, when he's good, and he's great, you know, when he gets the right material, whether it's Steve Jobs or Shame, I think he's a great actor, but he just has not been picking projects right. This could be the sort of, you know, underdog, nice movie that sort of represents a nice little comeback for him. Again, he's got Kung Fury 2 coming up with Schwarzenegger. I don't know why you're in that movie, dude. Like, that's a joke of a movie. I don't understand that decision. I think he may be a producer on that one. I don't know. I don't know if that's sort of driving some of these decisions, because I know he is, you know, active on the producing front. But this is a much better choice than some of the ones that he has made lately. Elsewhere, Winston Duke going to be campaigned in supporting actor for his performance in Us, whereas Lupita Nyong'o will be run in the leading category. An interesting choice, but kind of defensible. I can see it. I mean, over the second half of that film, Lupita definitely becomes the star and Winston Duke kind of takes a back seat. So if you can get away with it, sure. I don't really think Winston Duke has a chance in supporting actors. It doesn't really matter, you know, which category you campaign him in. I suppose Lupita has a shot. You know, people really love that performance. But I think if Toni Collette didn't get in last year for Hereditary, which I think was much, you know, she was much better than Lupita, kind of just put on like a silly voice for half this movie. I know she had to play two characters, but I don't necessarily see it. But then again, you know, Lupita is so beloved by everybody in Hollywood. I can't just cross her off totally. She also, by the way, as we segue into our TV portion of the show, signed on to this Americana series over on HBO Max. It's like a 10-episode limited series. Going to be showrun by Danai Gurira from The Walking Dead. I had no idea that she was like a playwright and you know, someone who was looking to be a showrunner in this town. But I thought that was kind of interesting. And HBO Max definitely putting together an interesting slate. You know, they also have that Ansel Elgort series with Ken Watanabe called Tokyo Vice. I'm going to put a quick call out for Snyder Cut mailbag questions here out on Twitter. So let me just see if you guys respond to this. Any questions for me on the Snyder Cut today? And we'll see if there are any replies to that tweet towards the end of the show. But yeah, lots left to cover. In TV news, Glow renewed for a fourth and final season on Netflix. Kind of surprised this movie, the series is not going five. But, you know, if the creators, Liz and Carly, feel like, you know, they're ready to wrap up this story after four, then so be it. I'm just glad that they made it this far on Netflix, which usually cancels series after one or two seasons. Glow, I love the first two seasons, and yet I have to admit, I have not watched the third season yet. I started the first episode, and then it just tailed off, and other things took priorities. Other Netflix series, you know, they've kept me busy. They gave me the whole fall screener collection. Netflix actually has a really fascinating way of doing media stuff. I mean, it's better than almost everybody else. I have my regular Netflix account, and they give you like a credit essentially. So I'm not paying maybe full price for my Netflix account. And then I have this extra row of movies that, you know, the average person does not have, movies and shows called preview content. And everything that they, you know, put on the service kind of goes into that preview content, you know, folder for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks before it's ready. You know, if it's a movie, it's less time. If it's a series, that's a bigger commitment. So they give you a little bit more time to watch it. And then I have like my own special PIN code that I put in. It's really, really very cool. Netflix is definitely, you can tell, on the cutting edge of all these technologies. I've been preoccupied with all this other Netflix stuff. Haven't caught the third season of Glow yet, but it is now that I know that there's like an ending point and it's going to wrap up after next season, I will definitely make sure to catch up with that third season soon. Timothy Oliphant going to be in season 4 of Fargo. I love this. It's kind of perfect. He's kind of perfect for that world. I'm pumped about the premise of the season this year with you know, an African American crime family and an Italian crime family swapping their sons and raising each son as their own, and then the whole truce and this peace, the peace that they have between the families goes to hell when one of them dies on the operating table, you know, accidentally. I'm not quite sure what Timothy Oliphant his role is going to be. I think it is one of like the leads in the series. They've got a great cast: Jack Huston, Jason Schwartzman, Jesse Buckley, along with Chris Rock. A lot of really cool names. Timothy Oliphant coming off of his turn in the Tarantino movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So, yeah, I like it. I am pumped. Congrats to Timothy Oliphant. I hope that he makes the most of this opportunity. And I hope that Noah Hawley rebounds from Lucy in the Sky, which, again, I saw last week and think I mentioned it wasn't great. Kind of went off the rails in that second half as Hawley lost the narrative, lost a feel for it. But Fargo, he has hit every season out of the park, and I cannot wait for that show to return to FX, which also has Always Sunny in Philadelphia coming back soon. Got to look at the first 4 episodes of that series. The second episode, make sure to check that out. That's a funny one about the gang basically gets asked to like be part of like a test audience for a movie. And it is as funny as it sounds. Jesse Hodges, who's married to Beck Bennett, by the way, on SNL, she plays the sort of the moderator or administrator of the test audience questions. Justin Theroux, our scoop from a few episodes ago that he was going to star in an Apple series based on The Mosquito Coast, which was the novel that his own uncle wrote. That was confirmed. Apple has picked it up straight to series. All the trades jumped on that one this week. So rumor of the week, panning out on Justin Theroux. We already talked about it, so no need to explore it further. Harrison Ford and Boyd Holbrook teaming up in a Quibi remake of The Fugitive. Sorry, not Harrison Ford. Kiefer Sutherland and Boyd Holbrook teaming up in a remake of The Fugitive, replacing Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford, obviously. Boyd Holbrook will be the guy who's sort of on the run. Kiefer Sutherland will be the guy hunting him. Kind of would have been great if it was the other way around. But Quibi, that is really the operative word in this entire sentence. Man, a lot of streaming services out there. Between HBO Max and this new Universal one and Disney Plus and Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, like, do people actually sign up for Quibi? What happens when one of these streaming services just spends so much on content, which Quibi clearly is? They've got a lot of big names and A-listers working on stuff. What happens when nobody tunes into this stuff? I mean, there's only so many hours in the day. I was talking about it with Frosty in the office. We are paid to consume content. Like, that is the entire gig. We can't even keep up with it. It is impossible. So what is it like for the average person who has kids and other responsibilities and, you know, wants to watch the news or the weather? Or like, I don't have time for these things. I don't have time for news and weather. I've got to watch Quibi series. All I know is I better be getting a free free account, Queeby. I'm happy to watch all your stuff, but I'm definitely not going to be paying for it. So going to need a free press account on that one. Saved by the Bell coming back. And guys, no one asked Mark Paul Gosselaar. First of all, before we get into this, I have a humiliating, embarrassing confession. When I was young, you know how, remember how actors, before they had Twitter and followers, they had fan clubs. And you would have to join the fan club and send off, like, money. And then they would send you things from, you know, whoever's fan club you were a part of. Guys, I was part of the Mark Paul Gosselaar fan club. It was the only fan club I was a part of. I'm a little ashamed. I'm a little ashamed of it these days. But yeah, I had a teddy bear, a white polar bear that was named Preppy, which was, of course, Zach Morris's nickname on Saved by the Bell, which was like my favorite show growing up. Totally wanted to be Preppy. Teddy bear was the best I could do. How do you not ask Mark Paul Gosselaar to come back? Seems like it's just beyond me. Not to mention the whole premise of the series, like, is about his character. He's like the governor who has created some law or something, and like involving schools and blah 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 blah. Slater and Jesse are in it. Mario Lopez, he just joined another, I think, was it Extra or Access? I don't know which show he moved from and then to. Elizabeth Berkley, she can't be doing much these days. Do I want to see these two together? Do I want to see, like, what happens when A.C. Slater calls Jesse Spano mama? Like, hey, mama. Like, does he still sit in his chair like that? Like, that's what I want to see. Is he like the principal now and he's turning around his office chair and sticking his legs in the sides of the chairs with the armrest? I don't know. This just seems like a bad idea. Leave Saved by the Bell alone, guys. And if you do bring it back, you got to have Mark Paul Gosselaar pick up the phone, for Christ's sake. Netflix made a deal for Seinfeld. This is an exclusive deal. I didn't know whether, like, you know, some seasons would be here and other seasons would be there. You know, but it makes sense given Seinfeld, his relationship with Netflix on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. They paid top dollar for this. Maybe not as high as The Big Bang Theory or some of these other shows. Because Seinfeld, you know, I still watch it all the time. It's like the perfect comfort food for me. But I'm shocked at how many people either don't watch Seinfeld, never did watch Seinfeld, have no interest in watching Seinfeld. Like, it's just a relic of the past. And some of the things that they get away with, they can never get away with today. People, I don't know, it's treated like it's – I don't know how it could be treated as anything less than the greatest sitcom ever made. But it's coming to Netflix. You'll be able to watch all the episodes. Exciting. Exciting stuff. Big deal for Netflix. The Goldbergs, they're coming back soon next week with a vacation-themed premiere. That's kind of perfect, guys. Goldbergs obviously lampooning a ton of 80s stuff. And vacation, does it get any more 80s than that? With that family, oh, it'll be great. Shane Gillis, by the way, as I predicted last week on the episode, I was like, I don't know. By the time you hear this, the episode 8 of the Snyder Cut, who knows if this guy will even have a job. He'll probably be fired. And sure enough, he was. He issued a shitty apology. They got rid of him. And then, like, a few hours later, he came back on Twitter and said, no, I got on SNL. Nobody can take that away from me, which is true. Which is true. But then he, like, denigrated the show. And was like, I was always a Mad TV guy anyway. If that's a joke, it's a terrible one. I mean, Mad TV, give me a break, dude. This guy, he just seemed like a troll. And normally I would fight to the death. I would go to the mats for anybody on free speech. And I hate that comedians, you know, can't feel like they can't say whatever they want. They should be able to up on stage. But Shane Gillis wasn't on a stage, was he? He was on a podcast. He wasn't really performing for a crowd. I mean, maybe there was a crowd watching this podcast being taped, but it's kind of just talking to his buddies. I was, again, I'm not easily offended. I was kind of disgusted by the language and just how lazy his comedy was. And like, so good riddance. It'll probably do wonders for his career, way more than just being like the white guy who stands in the background of a bunch of sketches and barely gets any time on the show. This will probably, you know, drive people to his stand-up shows. It just won't be driving me. Elsewhere, Felicity Huffman, speaking of people getting punished for bad choices, Felicity Huffman got 2 weeks in jail. I mean, jail time, really, for writing a $15,000 check? I don't know. I just – jail, it doesn't seem like the right punishment for her. I would have definitely hit her where it hurts in the pocketbook. But, like, is she a menace to society? Is she a threat? I just don't know why she needed to be locked up to be taught that lesson, which she probably already learned just from, you know, public humiliation. But whatever, 2 weeks, not the end of the world. She'll probably live, get through it. MoviePass finally shutting down. MoviePass is finally shutting down. Blah, blah, blah. What do you want me to say? These guys are crooks. I mean, it's amazing. Listen, just watching, like, the communication to customers from Mitch Lowe, from Ted Farnsworth. And now Ted Farnsworth, I think he wants to buy it himself from Helios and Matheson. Again, guys, I am not a stock market guy. But like a year and a half ago, when it seemed like everybody and their mother was talking about MoviePass, I gave my friend $100 to invest in the stock market on MoviePass. And within like a month or two, that $100 was worth like 39 cents. So as an investor, you're very welcome. I paid to send you all to these movies that MoviePass could not really afford to send you to. You took advantage of them and me, and they took advantage of us. I mean, me as an investor, you as a customer who was paying for a service, and they were just turning it off arbitrarily because they couldn't pay the bills. Anyways, these guys are scumbags, which means I'm sure that they will fall upwards in Hollywood and someone else will because it was a good idea. You have to give them credit for that. All the theater chains have done their own subscription programs now. MoviePass definitely recognized the need for that. But, yeah, it was just too much, too soon, and a goddamn mess. Netflix. This is an interesting report from Bloomberg from my pal Luca Shaw, who has a great newsletter, by the way, you should all be subscribing to. Netflix is going to be giving bonuses to filmmakers who hit viewership marks and win awards. That seems like standard operating business. Like, you know, like in Hollywood, if you make a studio movie and then that movie overperforms or hits $100 million or whatever, you know, maybe they'll throw you a nice luxury vehicle. It'll be waiting for you in a big ribbon on your driveway. It seems like Netflix just sort of playing that kind of game. I mean, they were already buying out back end from all these actors because they don't release movies theatrically. So, but I like the incentivization of these sorts of bonuses. Like, yeah, we're going to buy at your back end. We're going to pay you more up front than you normally would make. But again, if this movie really takes off for us on the streaming service and finds an audience, we will reward you and compensate you in another way. And they do say it's to filmmakers. They didn't really necessarily say actors or anything like that, who are already being paid pretty generously over there in particular. But I don't know. It's a good thing, and Netflix has to do it. If they want to, you know, keep A-list filmmakers coming to the service. One thing I also wanted to bring up this week, before we get into the movies and trailers and our patented rumor of the week, Tomri Laffley's tweet about, you know, publicists wanting journalists to interview talent before they can even see the project they're interviewing the talent for. She's sick of it. I'm sick of it. We're all sick of it. Publicists, please, for the love of God, just show us the work, and then I'll decide whether the person who made it or the people in it are, you know, deserve to be interviewed. Like, I don't want to sign up, yeah, and commit to an interview to an actor or a filmmaker, and then I see their movie and it sucks, and it's like I got to pretend I liked it now, and I, you know, it's just it doesn't seem honest to me. That's what I always tell people when studios are like, listen, you got to get your interview requests in now. I'm like, why? Why don't I see the movie and then I'll tell you who I want to talk to in it? So hopefully some publicist hears this and takes it to heart. I don't know how many publicists are listening to the Snyder Cut, but hey, that is on them because here comes the good stuff. Movies and trailers that I saw this week. We got about 20 minutes left in the show. Let's start with Unbelievable on Netflix. Wow. This show is terrific. And unlike When They See Us, Ava DuVernay series, or Chernobyl on HBO, you know, because it is basically on the level of those two shows, I didn't see this one coming. Those two were on the radar. I knew that those were going to be great. This one totally caught me by surprise. The great Merritt Weaver, who I've been a big fan of for a long time, thanks to Nurse Jackie and Godless and a whole bunch of other stuff. She's just a very talented character actress. Well, the character actress gets to step to the forefront this time, and she plays Detective Duval, and she's investigating a serial rapist. And it turns out it happens to be like the same serial rapist that Toni Collette is investigating in a nearby town. The show sort of jumps back and forth between Colorado and Washington in 2008 and 2011. It's based on a true crime, based on this ProPublica series of articles written by two male journalists. It stars Caitlin Dever and Danielle McDonald as two of the rape victims, Caitlin Dever in particular, and basically. Caitlin Dever is from Booksmart and Beautiful Boy. We see like glimpses of her rape from her own perspective, not from the rapist's perspective. So it's not exploitive, and you know she's adamant that she's raped. And at first, she gets support from her foster parents and from the community, the sort of group home that she lives in. And then you know she goes to the cops and she gets these two male detectives who. You know, are part of it is they're just doing their job, but they're not doing it very well, and they're not being very sensitive about it. And that's where the approaches between, you know, Merritt Weaver and Toni Collette and these two other guys are just couldn't be more different. And, you know, under pressure, she sort of recants the charges, the allegation that she had been raped. And they end up, like, going all the way with it. They're like, well, you know, we're going to – you can't, like, mess around with the police like this. We're going to file a false report. And it's just horrible, you know, to not only be raped but to be violated again by the police who are basically calling you a liar. What I loved about this show, obviously besides it's like it's female gaze and it's perspective because it comes from Susanna Grant. It was created by her. She did she wrote Erin Brockovich. A lot of it is directed by Lisa Chulidenko, who's fantastic. I spent the summer, again, reading all these John Douglas books, and I'm reading Obsession right now. It's the last Douglas book that I have to read, and it's all about rapists and serial rapists and the different kinds of rapists and the gentleman rapist, which is, you know, sort of what this guy was on the show. It's like, a, you know, the power reassuring rapist. I've been studying all this stuff, and it was just incredible to see it all right there, like – almost I felt like I was investigating this with them, and I could see the different signs and be like, well, no, it wouldn't be that person because the psychology of this rapist is this and that. And you know, like MO versus signature, that's what John Douglas is big on, and how the signature for this rapist is the photographs. Like that is sort of what, you know, gets him off in addition to just, you know, power, manipulation, you know, domination, control, all that stuff. It's like Mindhunter in that sense, except they're focused on one killer. And I just thought all the performances across the board were good. Even the cop, Eric Lang, who takes the initial statement and botches the initial investigation, he was really good. Caitlin Dever does stunning work here as a survivor. And like this is not like fun stuff to watch. This is not an evening of entertainment. But neither were Chernobyl. Neither was When They See Us. Like these are tough shows to watch, but absolutely terrific. And again, the acting across the board and unbelievable, and the writing. I just loved every second of it, and it got me emotionally in the last episode or two. Like I'll admit, it didn't necessarily have that element because it is. It's not that it's cold. It just didn't. It didn't make me tear up or anything like that early on. But it does pack that emotional punch towards the end. So definitely check that one out. Also on Netflix, as of today, I believe, or at least the embargo lifted today, Between Two Ferns, the movie. I think I'm going to agree with Matt Goldberg on this one. He reviewed the movie for Collider.com, so you can check that out over there. This is like laugh out loud funny and instantly forgettable. It's like 82 minutes or something like that, 88 minutes. I don't even know. Definitely under 90, but it's a fun, easy breezy watch. By the end, you know, as soon as it's over, you'll be like, you won't be able to even tell me what you just saw. You won't be able to recall the celebrities. But in the moment, I think you'll have a good time with it. Like this isn't something that you're paying $3.99 to $7.99 to rent on iTunes. It's like a little cherry on top of your Netflix subscription package, a little thing that can get a few laughs out of you. And Zach Galifianakis is a lot of fun in it. They have some great celeb cameos. Everybody is game to play along. Each interview is short, naturally, since you have to have like a narrative of a story and a movie around these interviews. So they're all pretty trimmed down, 75, 90 seconds, whatever it is. I think that you'll probably see Netflix expand on those and release like full interviews of everybody in the actual movie down the line. But again, if you like that format and Galifianakis and that show and his demeanor, his how just bizarre the humor is, I think that you will dig the Between Two Ferns movie. I also saw a couple of Amazon movies this week. The Report from Scott Z. Burns with Adam Driver and Annette Bening. It's all about like torture and how much, the U.S. government sanctioned and how much they knew about what was going on at these black sites. And listen, it was good. It was solid, very well-written movie. Adam Driver was excellent. Annette Bening was very good as a senator. But it, again, didn't have that emotion for me. It didn't have the visceral thrills of like a Zero Dark Thirty. It almost felt more like a rendition type of thing. It felt like watching CNN or Fox News for 2 hours. Jeff Wells' reviews of this movie, I think I've called it tedious a couple of times. It wasn't tedious. I just thought, like, this is like a B plus. Like, this is not going to be an awards contender, maybe for screenplay. But, yeah, I think this is like the sort of thing that'll bolster Adam Driver's awards chances for Marriage Story, but won't actually threaten to, like, take votes away or anything like that. I had similar feelings with Honey Boy. Like, I was real amped for Honey Boy. I thought I was psyched for that because I'm a big Shia guy. I love the Shia. If they ever make a movie about my life, get the Shia to flame me. But this, like, in all of this, I kept hearing, like, okay, Honey Boy, it's a story about Shia LaBeouf's childhood. Okay, but what is the story here? I don't know that it really had one. Like, it's a solid father-son story, and Shia and Noah Jupe do incredible work. Like, I think that they were better than Bening and Driver in The Report. I thought these two were great. And maybe Shia gets a nomination for this. I think acting more likely than writing, to be honest. Again, it was good. Alma Harrell did a good job with it. But it wasn't transcendent. It wasn't great for me. It didn't have that emotional resonance that I thought that it would have just watching like the trailer. Again, this is another one where maybe it makes some critics' lists or whatever, but I prefer the Peanut Butter Falcon, Shia LaBeouf's other movie this summer, and I don't really see this as an awards threat. Also saw The Platform. We talked about that on Movie Talk today, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. Go check out the Friday episode of Movie Talk with myself, Perry Nemiroff, and Mark Riley. I went nuts for this movie. It was great. Like halfway through it, 50-60% of the way in, I was like, this is a masterpiece. It didn't quite stick the landing the way that I hoped that it would, but it was probably the best genre film I've seen all year. Like it was just that and The Nightingale. I'm trying to like describe it. It's basically like set in a vertical prison, like this tower, and the people on the top of the tower get to eat. And the people in the bottom of the tower don't get to eat, and what that means. And, like, could the people at the top of the tower who are living like kings, could they, ration themselves to help the people below them live? It was a fascinating tale of humanity. It's also super gory, brilliantly acted. The Spanish, like, dystopian sci-fi thriller. I don't know that I'd call it a horror movie. Just won the audience award at Toronto's Midnight Madness and got bought by Netflix. So you will be able to see that. I also saw A24's The Death of Dick Long from Daniel Scheiner, one of the directors of Swiss Army Man, a movie that I walked out of at Sundance infamously. I do regret that, and I did apologize to both the Daniels on Twitter. Immature of me. This was better than Swiss Army Man for me. The Death of Dick Long, I can't say too much about it just because to give anything about this movie, to give anything away would really spoil the fun. because the surprises are bizarre. But yeah, it is a weird, outlandish movie. Not surprised that it hails from one of the guys of Swiss Army Man. But at least this time I was prepared, had an idea of what to expect. And yeah, it definitely delivered on that promise. I also want to plug the Rumor Mill this week. Make sure that you guys check that out. I had a great time filming that, and I will be back for the next episode. Josh McCuga hosts this new show that Collider has put together, where we just talk about crazy rumors, whether they're already real and on the internet, or whether we make them up ourselves, or maybe they're just rumors that I've heard that I can't report yet. Who knows? But, you know, McCuga brought the energy, he brought his A-game to this episode. I think that if you're listening to this podcast right now, you will really love it. But the best thing that I saw all week was probably that tweet with the dog dressed up as Chucky from Child's Play. I'm sure you've seen it going around. Brilliant. Whoever put that together, absolutely brilliant. There were a few trailers this week. Clemency, this movie that Neon is releasing. From Chinonye Chukwu, I believe it is. She's the first black filmmaker to take home the top prize at Sundance. This won the grand jury prize. It's a death row drama starring Alfre Woodard as a conflicted warden who is tasked with executing a prisoner played by Aldous Hodge, who you guys know I'm a big fan of after City on a Hill. He's blowing up. Both of them are said to be fantastic. This is the last movie coming out in 2019. So yeah, I'm excited for that one. I'm excited for Dark Waters. I mean, even though it feels like I've seen Dark Waters before, it's like the environmental type of movie, like a civil action, Aaron Brockovich-y, Spotlight-y, even with Mark Ruffalo from Spotlight pulling his whole, they knew act. But yeah, it's like, you know, the DuPont Chemical Company is poisoning the water and they knew about it. And Mark Ruffalo is the lawyer who's going to expose it all. He could be in the mix this award season. I don't know. You know, the movie seems familiar, so I don't know if that will actually break through. But you never know. You never know. God, I'm hearing a lot of good buzz on Judy, too. A lot of Collider folks went to that premiere the other night at the Academy and said they were just blown away by Renee Zellweger. Part of me fears, again, I haven't seen the movie. Part of me fears that she'll be this year's Glenn Close. I think that I just don't know. Like Perry said, Judy Garland really meant a lot to her growing up. I feel like the younger the Academy gets, the tougher it's going to be for a performance like that to win. Like, I just don't know how much Judy Garland means to people my age or anybody younger. But then again, you know, Hollywood loves to honor its own industry and people playing icons and legends in that industry. So maybe Renee Zellweger has a better chance than I thought. We're going to do the rumor of the week now, and then I'm going to see if there are any questions on Twitter for the Snyder Cut. This week's rumor of the week is brought to you by Nonsense. we should really get a sponsor for the rumor of the week thing. Anyways, let's see. All right, here's one. Here's a rumor. I'm hearing that Screen Gems may be prepping a remake of Urban Legend with Colin Minahan, who is one half of, I think it's the Vicious Brothers. Yeah, they did Grave Encounters. Colin Minahan possibly writing and directing a reboot of Urban Legend. That's one of those, you know, mid-late 90s slasher movies, kind of came on the heels of Scream, and I know he did last summer. I remember I had little, like, newspaper cutout in my bedroom for Urban Legend. I always liked it. It had a fun cast, Rebecca Gayheart, Alicia Witt. And depending on the young cast that they assemble for this one, could be a lot of fun. I'd look at those Euphoria kids. Get that Jacob Elordi guy in an Eskimo suit or something. But, God, remember the what was it? The cat or the dog in the microwave? Man, that was messed up. That was a good scene. But yeah, Screen Gems potentially looking to remake Urban Legend. I know New Line's sort of already up to something with Final Destination. But yeah, don't be surprised if you start to see those things come back. I mean, even Sony is trying to get, you know, another I Know What You Did Last Summer remake off the ground, right? So yeah, slashers coming back. We'll see how Black Christmas performs this December. It is rumored to be the secret screening at Fantastic Fest, but no confirmation on that yet. All right, we're going to wrap up the show with some of your questions. We've got a few minutes left. Film nerd Jamie asks, anything on what Spielberg is up to after West Side Story? For the life of me, I think Indiana Jones 5's chances of happening have come and gone. If he wanted it to happen, he could have forever and a day ago. I don't know about that. I mean, seems like Indiana Jones 5 is still going to happen. Obviously, Harrison Ford not getting any younger. Don't know what is up with those Chris Pratt rumors. Can't imagine it would still be him. Like, I'd have to see how Ghostdraft performs. Like, I got to see this guy outside of the Jurassic and freaking MCU franchises before I go ahead and call him a movie star. But yeah, I think Spielberg will do it. I don't know if it'll necessarily be the very next thing, even though it's supposed to be. But yeah, he's going to do it. Sean J. 8 asks, will there ever be an agreement in place with Netflix and theater chains to show Netflix movies in theaters? As a moviegoer in Nashville, I hate how I'm likely not going to be able to see Scorsese's next movie on the big screen unless my local nonprofit theater gets it. I mean, no, I don't necessarily see a compromise, just because it's not in Netflix's best interest to compromise on windows. Like, why would you put a movie out in theaters? You don't really even market movies for theaters. I don't know how good the marketing squad is on that front. But yeah, why would you put it in theaters and then wait 3 months to put it on the service? Like, that's not what Netflix does. Theater owners are the ones that are going to have to cave. I don't think that they're going to do it because it sets a bad precedent. But really, what's the difference if you go to your local nonprofit theater and you see it on the big screen that way? I mean, I know it's not a chain and may not have the greatest projection or sound, some of these smaller indie theaters, but I don't know. At least you get to appreciate the craft a little bit more than you would at home. And again, it's that communal thing. Like, you're still in a dark room. Doesn't matter how run down the seats are or whether the paint's peeling on the walls, you're still in a dark room with strangers, and that's what it's all about. So if you have to go to that local nonprofit, do it. Justin Kroll from Variety at Kroll JVar asks, will the Pats cover? Well, yes, the Pats always cover, don't they? I think Sony Michel's going to run all over them this week. Kevin Kazian, thoughts on Honey Boy? Does Shia have a supporting nom chance? Just spoke about that. I think, you know, Shia does have a chance, and I think that the fact that he wrote the script will bolster those chances. Like, that's another thing in his tipping the scales in his direction. But again, it's going to depend on the rest of the competition, and we still don't even know if all the movies are in the race. Like, we don't know if Richard Jewell is in or out this year. That could also affect things, because, you know, John Hamm and Paul Walter Hauser, a couple nominations up for grabs there. Sammy ZK95 asks, recliners and dine-ins are starting to enhance the theatrical experience. What would you like to see as the next innovation that theater circuits build into their theaters? The next innovation that theater circuits build into their theaters? I don't know how much innovating movie theaters need to do. I think there's almost a point where you can innovate too much. And I don't go to a lot of the dine-in theaters. Like, is that innovation, or is that just, like, an annoying pain in the ass? Yeah. I don't know. I don't need anything else. Just give me a dark room with a chair in it. That may be it. I think that may be a good point to wrap it up, guys. Anyways, that'll do it for the Snyder Cut. Working on getting some guests in. I'd love to have Danielle McDonald in from Unbelievable and Patty Cakes. Working on a few fun ones. Maybe even if we can, God, I'd love to get Gary Gulman in here again. Like I said, I watched his special. He's going to be in Joker. One of my favorite comedians. I'd like to be just covering comedy more on Collider, whether it's me or somebody else. Because I think it's a really fascinating, like, medium these days. You know, like, there's a lot of truth telling going on stage, for better and for worse, obviously. Anyways, guys, Snyder Cut, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. If you're listening to this, why do I need to tell you where to find it? It's like when somebody calls and they're like, can I get your number? Like, what did you just dial? Thank you for listening. If there's anybody you want me to try to get on this podcast, let me know. Just don't start throwing out A-listers like Todd Phillips. They're, you know, I can't get them on the Snyder Cut. We're a little show. I appreciate the audience. Share this with a friend. I think it's got a lot of insight that a lot of other podcasts don't. Hit me up on Twitter, at the Insnyder, if you have any questions, comments, concerns. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. And guys, here we go, Succession!
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, but it said Mr. Worldwide. You already know what it is. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Subscribe today. Now, part of the things that we're doing over here at Negative to Positive is encouraging people to change their lives, change the things that are within their power. I want to thank our good friends at KFC for helping me bring this to you. Feed your whole crew with KFC. Let's go. I can get the KFC bucket of chicken, and you know, that's fire! Now, Babo, you know that you could get that mac and cheese, that mashed potato, gravy, those biscuits. Now, that's trouble right there. That is fire right there. You know, on Negative to Positive, we always talking about striving and achievement. And the Colonel Sanders story is a story that inspired me since I was 10 years old. Look how life comes full circle. Now I'm talking about Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken and how much I love it. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Check out the vodcast. Subscribe today. Apple Podcast, Podcast One, Spotify.
Everyone needs more vacation, right? The new United Gateway card knows how to take you away with great travel rewards and no annual fee, ever. The wait for vacation is over. Tap now or visit UnitedGatewayCard.com to apply.